Don't get me wrong, it's very fashionable right now to have ADHD, and it is quite frustrating as a person who feels he's genuinely got ADHD.
Yep.
It is quite frustrating to see people throwing it around because it's fashionable. I can't say whether they're wrong or right because I don't know what they're like. I only can speak for my own opinion. But I saw Nick Tice saying that ADHD and all these things are being overdiagnosed and they're going to clamp down on that.
It's a political sort of bandwagon that people keep jumping on. Whereas to get the diagnosis, and you're not quite there, Alex, I think you're saying you haven't caught quite the diagnosis yet, but it sounds like you're well on the way. You have to go through all sorts of hoops. And then you see a clinical doctor specialising in that area, and only they can tell you. So for any politician who thinks they know more about ADHD than some actual psychiatrist...
Yeah,
I mean, it's absurd.
I think it was really poignant, that guy you had on from London City College. He obviously has no interest in saying whether it's overdiagnosed or underdiagnosed. He's just speaking from facts. And he said it's massively underdiagnosed. Yep. And that speaks volumes, doesn't it?
And he's the expert. So these politicians that think they know more about it, well, clearly they don't. And the figures today prove that. Alex, how long have you got to wait now?
No idea, mate. I've never heard anything back.
Still haven't heard back. You've got to chase that up. I
took it upon myself. Just to try other avenues.
It's not good enough. I mean, if this was a physical health problem, imagine going to the doctor and think, I've got diabetes, doctor. All right, I'll put you on the waiting list. You'll be seen in 3 years. That's where we're at with some of these conditions, and we've got to do better. Wish you all the best, Alex. I hope you get there. Keep in touch. Thank you, Alex, in Huddersfield. Ben Akentish here, in for Tom Sporbick on LBC. 5 o'clock the time. Here are the headlines.
Monday's shocking scenes reverberated around the city of Liverpool and the entire country.
For 53-year-old Paul Doyle appears in court, accused of driving a car into Liverpool's Premier League trophy parade on Monday.
The BBC aren't using their own money. So licensed payers, this could have been sorted out a long time ago.
Gerry Adams is awarded £84,000 in damages after winning his libel case against the BBC.
You will not be allowed to strike up a Gitan or Gaulois in many parts of France.
France announces plans to ban smoking in parks, on beaches and outside schools from this July, and...
Decriminalising like this, where we just stop policing possession at a small scale, leaves all the money in the hands of organised crime.
Half of Class A drug users are being let off by police without punishment. Are the police in this country still taking crime seriously?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 5 o'clock, a father of three accused of driving a car into crowds at Liverpool's Premier League title parade has appeared in court. 53-year-old Paul Doyle has been given a provisional trial date in November. He's yet to enter a plea. LBC's Liam Gotting has been at Liverpool Crown Court.
He looked incredibly emotional as he walked into the dock of the magistrates' court this morning at around 10:30, wearing a black suit and a white shirt. His voice wobbled as he spoke to confirm his name and address, and he spent the rest of the hearing sat with his hands in front of him and his head bowed, looking at the floor.
The BBC has been ordered to pay damages to former Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams for defamation. He's won his libel case against them over allegations he sanctioned the killing of a former party official, Dennis Donaldson, which he denies. The broadcaster says it's disappointed after being ordered to pay £84,000. Mr Adams spoke to reporters outside the High Court after the ruling.
I'm very mindful of the Donaldson family in the course of this long trial, and indeed of the victims' families who have had to watch all of this.
Russell Brand will go on trial next summer after pleading not guilty to charges of rape and sexual assault. The 49-year-old appeared in court earlier to face allegations from four women dating back to between 1999 and 2005. A human rights group has submitted legal papers against the UK's Equalities Watchdog over changes to guidance on biological sex. Liberty says a 6-week consultation period set by the Equality and Human Rights Commission is unlawful and wholly insufficient. The Supreme Court ruled earlier this year that the definition of a woman is based on biological sex. And US President Donald Trump has accused China of violating a 2-week-old truce on tariffs, but hasn't revealed how. Experts worry this could be a sign trade tensions between the world's two largest economies could begin to escalate once again. In the city, the FTSE 100 has closed up 55 points at 87.72. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.18. LBC weather turning increasingly breezy with the risk of showers in the north and west tonight. Dry and mainly clear in the south and east, a low of 5. Outbreaks of rain in the north tomorrow, mostly dry with sunshine in the south and southeast. Cloudy with showers elsewhere, a high of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
Just gone 5 o'clock. Very, very good afternoon if you're just joining me here on LBC. Ben Kentish in for Tom Swarbrick here on Drive this week. I want to talk to you between now and 6 o'clock about lawless Britain. It's a phrase that we're hearing more and more of, a narrative that is becoming louder and louder that tells us that apparently the country that we live in is one where increasingly anything goes and people do whatever they want, legal or illegal, without any consequences, whether it's shoplifting, tool theft, fare dodging. The list goes on. Barely a day goes by now without some story in the news about criminality having basically been decriminalised. People getting away with things that they really shouldn't be. We have become, it seems, a sort of soggier, greener, more self-deprecating version of the Wild West with slightly fewer cowboys and, for now at least, a lot less fewer guns. That's the narrative, at least. And if you ask some people, it's quite clear who and what is to blame. It's the police. It's a lack of enforcement. It's the people who are there to prevent crime and punish crime not doing their job properly. It's even coming from senior politicians, that suggestion. Have a listen to this. Shadow Justice Secretary Robert Jemrick talking to me here on LBC yesterday about his campaign against fare dodging in London, telling me he was fed up with law-breaking in Britain.
This is one example of many where the fabric of society is being torn apart, is being shredded by small acts of law-breaking, sometimes actually very serious ones. And we've got to see the state, the authorities, stepping up and taking action. Because I subscribe to the broken windows idea that if you allow one small act of law-breaking to take hold, many more people will join in, and then some of those people will go on to commit more serious offences. At Stratford Station, there were at least 8 officers there who were supposed to be doing enforcement. Very little seemed to be happening. I even put on the video where there was one officer who was sat with his feet up, doom-scrolling on his phone, whilst the gate was wide open and people were coming in and out. They didn't seem to be tapping in and out, so many of them may well have not been paying, for all I know.
Pretty clear suggestion there that Robert Jemrick links this sort of spate of criminality to ineffective policing. Police officers not doing what they are there and what they are paid to do, stop crime. Today, further evidence to bolster his argument on this. It's been revealed that half of Class A drug users are being let off by police without any punishment. 48.1% of people caught in possession of hard drugs like cocaine and heroin let off without any criminal sanction. That's a six-fold increase in the last 9 years of drug users being spared prosecution. And these are people who are found possessing the most serious Category A drugs. Is it fair to say the police are the cause of what is increasingly becoming lawless Britain? Is it the police not doing their job properly that is to blame, as both of those stories, Robert Jemrick's claims and this story about drug use, would seem to suggest? And if it's not an enforcement problem, what is it? What is going wrong? What is driving this sort of spate of lawlessness? 0345 6060 973 is the number you need, as always. Give me a ring on that line. WhatsApp the same number. Text 84850. Particularly interested to hear from you this hour if you work in the police or law enforcement, or you have recently, or you've got any insight into this. How do you feel about constantly being told, including by the likes of Robert Jemrick, you ain't doing your job properly and that's why we've got so much crime? And if that argument is wrong, what is it? If it's not just about a lack of proper enforcement or consequences, what is driving this? Is it just as much about a new mood of entitlement or greed or disregard to other people as it is about the failures of policing. That number once more for you this afternoon, 0345 6060 973. We will talk to a drug expert on this, about whether this might be a good trend, in fact, in just a moment. First, though, Her Honour Wendy Joseph KC joins us, former Old Bailey judge and author of Rough Justice, Do We Have the Law We Deserve? Great to have you with us here on LBC. Let's start, shall we, with this idea of lawless Britain, more and more people getting away with more and more crimes. Is that a picture that you recognise?
Well, you can't help but recognise it if you read a newspaper or turn on the radio. It's what we're hearing all the time. But, Bennett, whilst I understand what Robert Jenrick is saying about one broken window, I think you need to keep this in proportion. No one is saying that the police are ignoring murders or robberies or things of that nature. It is the lower level crime that we're talking about. Mm. And specifically, for example, whereas we are now hearing these extraordinary figures about the number of people who are in possession of Class A drugs not being prosecuted, it is important to remember that is not people who are in possession with intent to supply. It's sure. Not suppliers. It is the end user.
But the law is the law. I mean, you know that better than anybody. And you know, shoplifting, tool theft, all these things that have real, real consequences on real people and have effectively, it seems, been decriminalised because so little is done when those crimes occur.
Yeah. I mean, where there are things like fare dodging, like the stealing of tools in particular, and shoplifting in particular, where there are clear victims of it, it is extraordinary that things are not properly pursued. It may be, and you're going to hear this a bit later on from your expert, it may be that there's a more nuanced argument for the users of drugs, Class A drugs or Class B drugs.
Let's just talk about the fare dodging and the shoplifting, the tool theft, then we'll talk more about drugs in a moment. Do you buy this sort of idea that it's just a lack of enforcement that is driving the massive increase that we're seeing in those sorts of offences? Or do you think it's more of a culture almost now of people just thinking, well, I've got the right to take something from a shop, so I'll do it?
Well, I think it's a combination of both of them. There are certainly an awful lot of people now who are committing such offences. Mm. But the failure to do anything about it, I guess, I can't be sure, the police would say, is shortage of resources. I suspect they would say, well, it's rich coming from Robert Jenrick's lot. We didn't have the resources and we haven't got them now. I think that's what they would say.
I suspect they would, and hopefully we'll hear from some of them. But finally on the sort of cultural element, do you agree that there is a kind of growing sense of people feeling they can do whatever they want and they don't have any responsibility to anybody else?
I don't know if it's growing, Ben. Right. I think the people who were always prepared to do it are now doing it.
Right.
The people who never approved of it, I don't think they've all suddenly decided they're going to go out and...
But we'll come on to that later in the hour, because the vast majority of us are doing the right thing. And I think we are doing it not just because we are scared that if we don't, we'll be arrested, but because most of us still know right from wrong. And we still have a sense of morality and we still have a sense of doing the right thing. So I'm a bit dubious that it's just about policing, but we'll talk lots more about that in the hour. Thank you very much for coming on. Really interesting. Her Honour Wendy Joseph KC, former Old Bailey judge, author of Rust Justice, Do We Have the Law We Deserve? Let's talk specifically about the drug element of this. Professor David Nutt joins us, Professor of Neuroscience, Psychopharmacology at Imperial College London, who previously served as the government's chief advisor on drugs policy. Professor, very good afternoon to you. Might you say it's a good thing if actually the police are taking a more lenient approach and a less criminal approach to those that are found with Class A drugs?
Well, it's definitely a more rational approach. There's very little evidence that criminalising young people, particularly those who are first time they get caught in possession of any drug, does anything other than drive them into the criminal underworld and creates much, much more problems for them and their families and society than treating them with respect, but also helping them understand that they're breaking the law. Many of them may think they're not. And also, if they've got problems with drug use, getting them into treatment. And that this report shows that. But also, we've got 20 years history now of the Portuguese approach to personal use of drugs having really dramatically beneficial effects.
But that's an argument, is it not? And, you know, I take your point completely. That's an argument for looking at decriminalisation. But the law is the law, and it remains the law, that these are illegal substances with supposedly potentially quite serious consequences if you are found with them. If that law continues to be in place, as it does, then it's the police's job to enforce it, and they're not doing that right now.
Yeah, well, everyone knows the drug laws aren't based on any sensible scientific evidence, and that's part of the problem.
But then you change the law. You don't just say, oh, well, the police are free to not enforce them.
Well, absolutely. Change the law. You lobby to change the law, please. That would be great.
I'm on board with it. I've said for a long time I think certain drugs should be decriminalised. But until they are, I have a problem with the police in some areas, for example, not prosecuting 80% of people found with Class A drugs.
The majority of people caught with drugs, as your previous interviewer pointed out, are using and they're not dealing. And prosecuting users, as I've said earlier on this interview, prosecuting users creates a vicious circle where they get criminal records. They cannot get jobs in the police or the services or teachers. So they end up becoming a criminal underclass. We tried that.
Yeah.
Gordon Brown and Tony Blair tried criminalising young black people in London. And what do we have? In the end, we had riots. It's the wrong approach, particularly when it's racist, because I don't hear great calls for people to prosecute politicians who openly admit to taking cocaine. We know that when we test the toilets in Parliament, we find that most of them... Yeah, and the point is the drug laws are not evidence-based, and they're not...
I absolutely agree.
Appropriately
but I sort of go back to the point, if the law is there, then allowing people to basically break it without consequence, does that not risk, Professor, undermining faith and trust, and to an extent, fear in the law more broadly?
I'm not sure the drug laws do. I think the drug laws are so out of kilter with anyone's sensible knowledge about drugs and drug harms. Everyone knows the drug laws are political and arbitrary, and alcohol, being the most harmful drug in the UK, is actively marketed. I mean, so you can't really say the drug laws are going to protect you from harm when you allow that.
Really interesting. Thank you, Professor. Professor David Nutt, Professor of Neuropsychopharmacology at Imperial College London, previously served as the government's chief advisor on drugs policy. If you do recognise, and I think I do, a country that feels like it's becoming more and more lawless, where more and more people are breaking laws and getting away with it, who or what do you blame? And is it fair just to say, oh, well, it's the police, they're failing? Or is it actually that they are, firstly, not being given the help they need to tackle crime, but secondly, the sheer scale of people committing those offences means that they can't cope? And if that is it, what's driving that? Poverty, desperation, or is it just entitlement and a complete breakdown of order and respect and civility in this country? 0345 6060 973, the number for your calls on that. Lots of your calls coming in. Those to come right after news headlines with Amelia Cox.
The father of three accused of driving a car into crowds at Liverpool's Premier League title parade has appeared in court. The BBC has been ordered to pay former Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams damages following a libel case. And Russell Brand has denied charges of rape and sexual assault and will go on trial in June next year. LBC weather turning increasingly breezy with the risk of showers in the north and west tonight. Dry and mainly clear in the south and east, a low of 5 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Trawner. Starting on the M25, moving anti-clockwise, there are delays at Junction 2 for the Darrant interchange. That's because of a broken down car. And staying anti-clockwise in the M25, long delays at the Dartford Tunnel with a breakdown adding to that, roughly totalling 40 minutes extra onto your journey. In Beckenham, Upper Elmers End Lane is closed in both directions between Lloyd's Way and the close. That's because of an accident. While in New Southgate, long delays on the North Circular heading eastbound from New Southgate to Upper Edmonton. Finally, in Barnet Gate, Highwood Hill is partially blocked in both directions at Henwood Wood Lane. That's because of a fallen tree, and there are severe delays on the overground on the Mulbay line due to signal problems.
This is LBC.
Club card accepted.
Feel the power to lower prices with Tesco Club Card. Get Nescafe Azira coffee for just £3.50. Down from £7.25. Celebrating 30 years of rewards with Tesco Club Card. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of larger stores, Nescafe Zero 90 grams, and 10th of June, Club Card or app required.
Call Ben Kentish, 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. Globalacademy.com.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £185 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Thank you, faraway person. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Subject to currency fluctuations, the jackpot is capped at €250 million. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
The British Red Cross is here to welcome people fleeing the conflict in Ukraine.
We're here to help people to safety when storms hit.
We're here to show anyone struggling that someone cares.
Hiya, that's a huge help.
We're here for humanity. With your support, the Red Cross has helped millions of people in the UK and 190 other countries. Search British Red Cross to support us. Together, we are the world's emergency responders.
The Virgin Atlantic holiday sale is now on. This is your sign to taste Jamaican jerk chicken so good it brings a tear to your eye. Catch a New York basement gig worth the 10-block detour. Or hit the dunes in Dubai and find sand in your pockets for weeks. Seize the sale. Book in store or online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected routes. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com.
Ben Kentish on LBC.
5:20 is the time. Robert Jemrick's suggestion yesterday that people are only dodging fares because police officers are sitting around scrolling through their phones while criminals commit crime. The latest is sort of suggestion that this crime wave we seem to be going through, low-level crime generally in this country, is the fault of police and law enforcement not doing its job. If you work in that area, if you're a police officer, if you work in law enforcement, is that narrative that's becoming more and more popular, is it fair? Is it right? Is it reasonable to say you are the problem? It's your failings that are causing this. And if it's not, and I'm dubious of that argument, if it's not that, what do you think it is? 0345 6060 973. If you're still in the police, don't have to give us your real name or your real location. This comes in from Mark Ben. It's 14 years of Tory cuts to the police and to the criminal justice system. It's the IOPC going after officers even when they act lawfully. And it's also the public allowing this. It's the media, he says, the Daily Mail and the Telegraph, constantly bashing police officers. And it's the police doing social service jobs and mental health service jobs because they can't be bothered to do them themselves. That comes in from Mark, a police officer in Kent. Matthew's a first-time caller in Catford this evening. Matthew, hello.
Hi, Ben. How you
welcome.
Doing?
Welcome. Yeah, I'm fine, thank you. How about yourself?
Yeah, not bad, thanks, mate.
Talk to me about this. What's going wrong?
Well, so this week I had a good conversation with a police officer because I had to call them out to my property because I had some tools stolen from the vehicle. And he was sort of, we were discussing where the funding is and why they think these problems are happening. And they were agreeing that it's just they can't get where they need to and they're spread really thin.
Yeah.
So it was quite interesting.
But
to
why are they spread so thin? Because, I take the point about, Mark was just making about police cuts. There are now more police officers than ever before.
And there's more people than ever before.
That's very true. And there seems to be more crime than ever before.
There's more everything, right? Yeah. Everything's ramping up and things aren't keeping up. I reckon the public move quicker than what the government can in regards to that aspect. You see the crime happening in front of your eyes and then it needs to drip down to the police, I think.
I'm a bit dubious, if I'm honest with you, Matthew, about this all being laid at the police's door. Because, I mean, let me ask you, if you could steal someone's tools from their van and I could guarantee to you that you would get away with it.
Not interested, mate.
Would you do it?
No.
And most
the impact
of us
that causes people this the following it. Day, the things that come after that is honestly, it's not just the case, our tool's gone, let's get around and sort it. You've got wages to pay, you've got vehicles to sort, vehicles aren't in fit state to drive anymore, and then the stress that comes with it, you know.
The reason that stops you robbing other people's tools is a strong sense of right and wrong.
Yeah,
and
moral,
morality.
Yeah.
But this is the point, isn't it? The reason that most of us don't commit crime isn't because we fear that we'll be arrested if we were. It's because we have a sense of right and wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that is a bigger explanation for what we're seeing right now than simply failures of policing, that more and more people seem to think nothing of walking into a waltzing into a shop and taking what they want. Not just because they think they can get away with it, but because they don't have any moral objection to that.
Yeah, it's crazy. You see it all the time, right? Like, literally on the high streets, they're riddled with this kind of crime at the minute. And as you say, like, it probably does lead to sort of drug abuse and trying to feed addictions and habits, and whether they don't cover the NHS, this is obviously up to standard at the minute. There's aspects. So it's, like you say, it's not just the police, it's spread across the board of government service, possibly.
Do you think some of it is just desperation? Do you think people robbing from each other, robbing from shops, not paying their fares when they get on public transport, is it because they just can't afford it, or do they just not want to?
If you asked me what I'd do if I was desperate, I'd be out there trying to find any job that I could. I'd be doing anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? My desperate wouldn't be going stealing some vodka from a shop. It wouldn't be ruining someone's income. Do you know what I mean?
I absolutely know what you mean.
Like, my desperate, that's not desperate. Like, I don't know. I think
I think you speak for the sort of law-abiding majority who, however tough times are, would go to great lengths not to steal or thieve or rob. Because we have, most of us, the vast majority of us, have that sense of right and wrong. And yet it
seems...
it's
also community as well,
community,
right?
Like, absolutely.
You want to be a part of, like...
But the minority that don't have that small minority that have no respect for other people, from what I can see, is growing.
Yeah, because they'll be in their own echo chamber surrounded by everyone that supports what they're doing, if that makes sense.
Do you think that's what it is? That they just think everyone else is on it?
Go rob this shop. We've made loads of money. We're able to get our score today. Like, do you know what? Little things like that. Okay,
gotcha.
Cool. Let me go have a go myself. Like, if you see people succeeding in crime, which is fairly easy to commit, right? You just got to have the sort of the mindset to do it, right? It's not complicated. You run in, grab some stuff, run out. If you're committed to it, you can do it. So I think they just try to egg each other on, and then all go.
But again, we come back to what you said at the start, Matthew, which is, even if you knew you could get away with it, and I knew that I could get away with it, we wouldn't do it because. There's
we're
a sort of
these groups,
there's
and
a
these communities of them people. You know what I mean?
I think this is far more about entitlement and about a complete lack of regard and respect for other people than it is about consequences and policing and sentences. I think the police get the blame. Some of it's about that, of course it is, but more of it is about a sort of breakdown of morals. This comes in from Andrew Benn. We've lost a sense of moral code, and it's a slow creep before society starts to break down. Needs a three-pronged approach. Petty crime needs a strong deterrent. Criminal records and tags and curfews need to be used more. And there should be a message from politicians, religious leaders and people of influence about moral responsibilities. Is that from Andrew in Fulham? Interesting. Matthew, thank you for your call. Where are you on this? Is it fair to just lay all the blame for this sort of increasingly lawless country that we seem to be living in at the hands of the police and those responsible for upholding the law? Or is it more of a social problem? Is it a societal problem, perhaps? 0345 6060 973. 5:27 is the time. Let me bring you a bit of breaking news here on LBC. A man was stabbed by an inmate at HMP Long Larton Prison in South Littleton earlier today. Officers were called to the prison shortly after 10 a.m. after a report that an officer had been stabbed by an inmate. The 25-year-old sustaining serious injuries and was airlifted to hospital, where he remains. The inmate remains within the prison and a weapon has been recovered. An investigation now underway. Yet another instance, it seems, of extreme violence in a prison against a prison officer. More on that later in the show. First, though, 5:27, let's get an LBC Business News update with Ben Kumar from Seven Investment Management. Ben, let's talk about Nigel Farage, the latest sort of figure on the right of politics in this country and the US, seemingly a bit obsessed with crypto.
Yes, so speaking at a crypto conference in Vegas, so definitely the right audience for him to say, if I get elected at the next election, I will make London an international trading center for crypto. I will have a strategic reserve of Bitcoin, which is what the US is looking to do, you know, and I will embrace crypto and digital assets. Look, partly I think if you're invited to speak at a crypto conference and you don't say, I'm here and I love crypto, you're going to get booed off stage. But it does seem to be something that is gaining a lot of popularity. You know, I think there is a little bit of an element of everyone knows or has heard of someone or knows of someone who has got rich through crypto.
Yep.
And so it's a really appealing thing for a politician to come and say, well, We'll make it more available to you. We'll make it more accessible. And even if it doesn't make you rich, it has the hope that makes you rich. Now, I actually, I'm pretty sceptical that, you know, making London a crypto trading hub will do much for most people. You know, I really don't think that that necessarily matters. You can trade crypto pretty freely anywhere in the world, but it's a great headline to maybe capture also some of the younger voters out there who haven't been paying attention until Nigel Farage pops up on TikTok saying, what about Bitcoin?
Interesting. Why is it, Ben? I mean, it's particularly sort of the populist right, Donald Trump, Nigel Farage, those types that seem to be especially allured and attracted to this sort of crypto revolution. Any thoughts on why that is?
I think it's two things. What, the populist word is right. You know, it is just popular. And a good populist politician jumps on whatever the trends are and follows them and gets involved in them and makes them their own. And they're very good at that. The other thing, and Donald Trump is extremely good at doing this, is it's an extremely good way of getting money, right? So Nigel Farage has said reform is now going to accept cryptocurrency payments. Donald Trump has launched his own cryptocurrency and is making, you know, millions off it. So again, it's this slight populist edge which directly benefits the politician. You know, if anyone else were doing it, Ben, if they weren't running a political party, you'd say they're an absolute scam artist. But because they're trying to make it the law, they can, you know, they can actually push this forward a bit, and the narrative keeps going.
Do you think is Nigel Farage going to launch a currency? Is that where this is going? Brexit coin or something?
Oh, it won't be Brexit coin anymore, will it? Stop the boats coin?
Should we put that out there? Should we put that out? What would Nigel Farage's cryptocurrency be? 0345 606 0973. Text me 84850. Ben, thank you very much indeed. Ben Kumar from Seven Investment Management. I mean, that's the next step, isn't it? What would Farage call his cryptocurrency? Get your text coming in on that. Ben Kentish in for Thomas Warbrick here on LBC. Still to come.
We need to get back to a ceasefire. That means that the Israeli government needs to accept one, and of course Hamas need to accept one. I hope we're about to see a breakthrough.
Israel accepts a US proposed plan for a ceasefire in Gaza, but Hamas says the deal is still under discussion. Is there any prospect for another bout of peace breaking out in the Middle East? Look at that in detail. Straight after news headlines, 5:30, Amelia Cox.
A 53-year-old man accused of driving into crowds at Liverpool's Premier League title parade has appeared in court. Paul Doyle is facing several charges, including GBH with intent, after 79 people were injured on Monday. The BBC says it's disappointed after being ordered to pay damages to former Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams. He'd taken the broadcaster to court over allegations he'd sanctioned the killing of a party official, which he denies. And comedian Russell Brand has pleaded not guilty to charges of rape and sexual assault at a court in London. The 49-year-old will now face trial scheduled to begin in June next year. LBC weather turning increasingly breezy with the risk of showers in the north and west tonight. Dry and mainly clear in the south and east, a low of 5 degrees.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall.
Dame Emily Thornberry, chair of the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, Labour MP in Islington as well, of course, joins me in the studio. Do you think we're moving on from the Brexit wars?
I think they probably don't care. I mean, I think that on the whole, those who wanted to leave are happy, those who didn't want to leave are not particularly happy, but everybody's kind of moved on.
Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
Do you agree with him that they are using starvation as a weapon of war?
They say that they are not allowing food into Gaza in order to get the hostages back. I have to say, this is not the way to behave. They have to stop. This far-right government is behaving in the most appalling way, and there will be a reckoning.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall. Sunday morning from 10 on LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
Discover outlet shopping at the O2 this spring. Save up to 70% off RRP on over 60 designer brands, including Nike, Adidas, Levi's, Kate Spade, the Cosmetics Company Store, Le Creuset, and more. And with over 30 bars and restaurants, a cinema, bowling, climbing, interactive football, mini golf, paddle tennis, and indoor skydiving, why not stay for the day? Visit us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search outlet shopping at the O2 and plan your trip today.
Next time you walk their dog or feed their cat, when you pop by for a cuppa or just stop for a chat, tell your friends about Pension Credit. They could be missing out on an average of over £4,000 per year to boost their pension income. Pension Credit also unlocks other support like help with heating costs, council tax, and a free TV licence for people over 75. Tell them to search for Pension Credit on gov.uk. Pension Credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
5:35 the time. Lots of your suggestions coming in for what Nigel Farage might call his cryptocurrency. Most of them unreadable on the radio, but quite a lot of you. Of course it's going to be Bitcoin, isn't it? Obviously. Bitcoin is the answer to that question. silly question to ask, because the answer is almost so obvious. Well done to everyone who pointed that one out. Let's come back to our conversation about policing. Is it really responsible for the sort of increasing lawlessness that seems to be gripping this country right now? Ian's calling from Newport. Ian, you're a serving officer.
I am, Ben. Great conversation.
Good to have you on.
I just want to make a few points. I do actually subscribe that the police are responsible for quite a large part of it.
Okay.
Standards in policing since I have joined, which was about 23 years ago, have significantly dropped. The way the police use their resources has, in my opinion, got a lot worse. For sure, they've lost a lot of people, a lot of experience. But the way the police deploy resources and the way that they are used at incidents has, in my opinion, got a lot worse.
Right.
Now, obviously, a multifaceted problem with regards to what the public expect, what they want, what they need. But I do think that the police have quite a big part to play. And also, the police tend to, in my opinion, act on what they think the public want, rather than what they actually do want. I think there's a big disconnect in that respect.
So what do you think the public's wanting you to do, Ian, that you and your colleagues aren't or are being told not to, perhaps?
I think the public want to see people on the streets, police officers on the streets, interacting with the public, enforcing the law, patrolling antisocial behaviour hotspots, all the sort of things that were probably done 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't think that's done so much anymore, and it's not done with the same effect because the standard of some of the police recruits coming in now is so poor.
Because it's the low-level crime that most of us are going to experience, isn't it? Thankfully, most of us are not going to have direct experience of murder or some of the more severe offences, but it is your phone being nicked or your shop being robbed or you being burgled or antisocial behaviour that police are sort of really not doing much about, despite being the sort of crime that affects the most people.
Yeah, these are not decisions made at constable or sergeant level. These are decisions made at a much higher rank. Mm. So it's not knocking the rank and file on the ground.
Of course. Who are doing your best in tough circumstances.
Exactly. And the vast majority of people who join the police join for the right reasons to do the right thing. But they're not being deployed correctly, and they don't have the skills. And more importantly, Ben, they don't have the life experience. Some of the officers that are being taken on now are 19, 20 with no life experience whatsoever. And that then transpires into how they deal with incidents, how they interact with people, decisions they make. And ultimately, that affects the end outcome. Now, there's obviously other incidents as well with regard to the penalties for these crimes. If you speak to criminals, like obviously I do, they will tell you that the penalty is worth the risk.
Right, so even if they are caught, and even if they are punished, the punishments often aren't tough enough.
Exactly.
Got you.
If you're going to make thousands from a burglary, and you might get a year, a lot of criminals will take that chance.
Well, I said before, the people who burgled my relatives, and they'd been found to have committed a whole string of burglaries, got, I think it was 3 months.
Yeah, and people will take that chance.
Yeah. Ian, just lastly, do you feel like you're sort of fighting a losing battle in the sense of the sheer scale of, let's call it minor, but you know what I mean by that, minor criminality? Do you think, in other words, people's, what's the word, almost respect for the law or lack of it has changed, or have you not noticed that?
I think for the vast majority of decent people, the respect is there and always will be. Because we are talking about, I still believe it's the minority.
Absolutely.
Of general public.
But is that minority growing, as I was sort of suggesting it was? The minority who just have no regard at all for doing the right thing?
Yes, exactly. Because the police, to a certain degree, are hands tied. If they act harshly, they're held, and quite rightly, to account. But you turn up to an incident now, people are phoning, phones out, people are complaining, even over the slightest little thing. If the police say, OK, yeah, no problems at all, we will deal with these people a lot more softly, then, oh, that's not acceptable either. And I do think, as much as I think the standards in police are poor, I do think society has a certain accountability here as well.
Because you cannot be at every crime that is committed. You cannot be there every time someone takes something from a shop or steals someone's tools or dodges a fare, as is the latest example. We all rely on other people that we live amongst doing the right thing. Not doing the right thing because they're worried about what happens if they don't, but doing the right thing because they have a sense of right and wrong. And that seems to me what's breaking down. Ian, fascinating call. Thank you very much indeed. Because we're constantly told, aren't we, shoplifting's being decriminalised. There's no consequences. And if it was just all, if it was the case that we are only motivated by fear of punishment, we'd all be down Sainsbury's right now, stripping the shelves. We'd all be in Tesco taking what we wanted. Because there's no consequences, apparently. We can get away with it. And the reason the vast majority of us don't is because we know it's wrong. Because we've been brought up to believe that theft is theft and stealing is stealing. Whether the police are there or not. Would you rob a shop if you could get away with it? Most of us know the answer to that, and it's no. Ian, fascinating. Thank you very, very much indeed. Ian talking about, yes, policing being part of it, but not the all, not the be-all and end of it by any means. 20 to 6 the time. Ben Kentish here on LBC. Let's just turn our focus to the Middle East, where there seems potentially to have been a quite significant and positive for a change development today. Israel accepting a US-proposed ceasefire plan. Hamas, meanwhile, saying it's still under discussion. So William Patey joins us, former British ambassador to the Middle East. So William, Israel accepting this, Hamas not yet. What do we know about what this deal entails and what prospect that it might actually lead to peace?
Well, we've had a series of deals that one side has accepted and the other side has rejected. I mean, this latest deal appears to be for a 60-day ceasefire, temporary ceasefire, in which Hamas would release half of the remaining live hostages, half of the remaining dead hostages, and that would give them a 60-day ceasefire. Israel's perfectly happy to do that. But the Hamas rejects this because they see the hostages as their last leverage to bring an end to the conflict. And it's quite clear that the Israeli government is not yet ready to end the conflict. They have other objectives. Indeed, the release of the hostages seems to be the minor objective they currently have. So, I mean, we've got sort of two sides talking past each other. I mean, Hamas will want to see this as if they were to accept the ceasefire, it would be as a step towards an end to the war, which is what the international community wants, an end to the carnage we see in Gaza. But the Israeli government have, some of the Israeli government, well, the ones that matter, have different objectives. So we'll see. Hamas are in no real position to negotiate, so they may be forced to agree. But it wouldn't surprise me if this is yet another ceasefire deal that doesn't come to fruition.
And if they, just to be clear, under the terms of the proposal, so if they did agree, the peace would still only be short-lived.
Yeah, it'd be 60 days. And what the Hamas appear to be objecting to is there is no humanitarian component to it. What they want is unfettered humanitarian access, whereas the Israelis want to limit the humanitarian access to this this body that they have set up, which is designed to allow humanitarian assistance in very limited areas, designed to reshape the population of Gaza. So each side is playing its own game here.
Interesting. Thank you, Sir William. Sir William Patey, former British ambassador to the Middle East, even a 60-day pause, if it gets that aid in to where it is needed, my goodness, that can't come a day too soon, can it? Even 60 days would be far, far better than where we are. This comes in on WhatsApp. I fully agree that people increasingly lack a clear sense of right and wrong. If you need some insight as to why, look to current affairs news of all kinds. And Annabelle Beverly says, regarding lawless Britain, I was talking to my husband about not seeing any police. A balaclava wearing feral rode past on an unlicensed, uninsured bike. A shortage of resources is partly to blame, but so are expectations. The mindset is, what are you going to do about it? There are no consequences for crime today, says Annabelle in Beverly. Is it just about consequences? Is it about people's ethics and morals as well? Ben Kentish here on LBC, in for Tom Swarbrick here this afternoon. Still to come,
Donald Trump this week couldn't win for losing. I'm Simon Marks. American Week is next.
Let's get the news headlines first. 5:44 is the time. Here's Amelia.
A man accused of driving a car into crowds in Liverpool on Monday is due to stand trial later this year. The High Court has ordered the BBC to pay damages to former Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams, and Russell Brand has denied rape and sexual assault allegations and is scheduled to go on trial next summer. LBC weather turning increasingly breezy with a risk of showers in the north and west tonight. Dry and mainly clear in the south and east, a low of 5 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Chawner. Starting on the M25, moving anti-clockwise, long delays at the Dartford Tunnel with a breakdown adding to the disruption. While in Rainham, the new road is partially blocked in both directions at Marsh Way because of an accident. In New Southgate, there's long delays on the North Circular heading eastbound from New Southgate to Upper Edmonton, adding roughly 40 minutes onto your journey there. And in Barnet Gate, Highwood Hill is partially blocked in both directions at Hendon Wood Lane because of a fallen tree. In Twickenham, congestion on the Chertsey Road heading westbound from Twickenham Bridge to the Hospital Bridge roundabout. And finally, minor delays on the Bakerloo line because of cancellations.
LBC. At Halfords, we want you to say yes to packing more into summer days with a great value roof box or bike rack. Say yes to freewheeling fun with bikes and gear for all the family. Say yes to a perfectly polished car with our range of car cleaning products. And say yes to easy breezy trips with a free aircon check. Our experts are on hand with checks, advice and fitting. So pop into your local store or shop online and say yes to summer at Halfords. Subject to availability, see halfords.com for full T's and C's.
Call Ben Kentish, 0345 6060973, LBC.
How likely is she to, you know, have another heart attack?
Can I still go to the gym after heart surgery?
Is my mum still my mum if she has a new heart?
When it comes to heart health, no question is too big or small. That's why British Heart Foundation have dedicated cardiac nurses you can speak to by phone, email, or online chat.
Hi, this is Chloe from British Heart Foundation. How can I help?
Search BHF Cardiac Nurses.
What's your possible? The vision only you can make happen. Whatever the size of your business, accelerate your growth with the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform. Power your possible with the number one recommended cloud accounting software, Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals. Verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
At Wix, save on Dulux Standard 2.5-litre coloured emulsion. Was £23, now £15. Feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Ends Wednesday. Terms apply.
Nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. Discovering amazing destinations like Ibiza, Lanzarote and Crete. And relaxing in the sun with award-winning VIP service from the Which? Travel Brand of the Year 2024. So, book now from London Luton Airport with Jet 2 holidays. Package holidays you can trust. Patronage protected, subject to availability and conditions.
Motoring World. Wow, 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 Motoring World.
Yes, that's right. Big Motoring World is also Wow Motoring World because we price check our cars every day to guarantee you our best price, with up to 95% of them below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on what matters to you. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise in terms and conditions.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert. Nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC with Ben Kentish.
It's a Friday afternoon slash evening. It's 5:45. You know what time that is. Time for Simon Marks, LBT's Washington correspondent. And here's American Week.
Ben, some American weeks, you've almost got to pity President Donald Trump. He appears to be finding the whole process of governing just way more complicated than he suspected, which is odd given that he's given this whole presidency thing a go before. But this was the week when various chickens came home to roost, and one of them was of the Russian variety.
I'm not happy with what Putin's doing. He's killing a lot of people, and I don't know what the hell happened to Putin. I've known him a long time, always gotten along with him. But he's sending rockets into cities and killing people, and I don't like it at all.
Now, who among us cannot empathise? I'm sure we've all had friendships that go off the boil. One minute, you're getting along with the fella perfectly well. You've even had a two-hour phone date in which he's assured you that he really likes you. Next thing you know, he's put missiles on 355 drones and launched the largest ever aerial bombardment of his next-door neighbour. Talk about antisocial behaviour. You almost want Robert Jenrick to chase Putin down with a video camera. I mean, who could have seen it coming?
I'm very surprised. We'll see what we're going to do. What am I going to tell you? You're the fake news, aren't you? You're totally fake. All right, any other questions? I don't like what Putin is doing, not even a little bit. He's killing people. And something happened to this guy, and I don't like it.
He doesn't like it. Well, at least he's taking a stand. Although he's now decided to give his old mucker in the Kremlin two more weeks to calm down and engage in more talks about a 30-day ceasefire, during which the rest of us all know that Putin will continue to remain on brand, kicking the ball into the long grass, killing lots more innocent Ukrainians, and playing Donald Trump like a Stradivarius. The Russian leader was just the start of Trump's problems this week. The American judiciary was next in line to irk him.
We're getting some breaking news regarding President Trump's sweeping tariff regime. The Washington Post has it. Take a look at this. The Court of International Trade ruled today that President Trump exceeded his authority in imposing tariffs on all imported goods.
For months, Trump has argued that the world is ripping America off, defiant in his executive authority to impose these staggering tariffs. But now a federal panel says the president is overstepping his authority and that his tariffs are illegal.
Those are the ones he declared back on April 2nd, his so-called Liberation Day.
Fox, ABC, and then MSNBC there with news that stunned the White House. You remember Liberation Day, the moment a new golden age began in America, heralded by a Eurovision Song Contest-style event in the White House Rose Garden when the rest of the world was told to pay up.
Indonesia, Malaysia, Cambodia. Oh, look at Cambodia, 97%. We're going to bring it down to 49%. They made a fortune with the United States of America. United Kingdom, 10%. And we'll go 10%. So we'll do the same thing.
Very big of him. Well, they're not laughing now. According to two separate courts, the president did not, in fact, have the power at the stroke of his trademark felt-tipped pen to upend the entire global trading system without asking Congress how they felt about it. Just to be clear, the courts are not saying you cannot impose tariffs on your trading partners. They are saying, Mr. President, you are not a dictator. You've got to work with Congress. To which the White House says,
the courts should have no role here. There is a troubling and dangerous trend of unelected judges inserting themselves into the presidential decision-making process. America cannot function if President Trump, or any other president for that matter, has their sensitive diplomatic or trade negotiations railroaded by activist judges.
Let's be clear about what White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt said there. America cannot function if the President of the United States is required to uphold the Constitution. Constitution. It is the Constitution that allows judges, and Congress for that matter, a pretty substantial role in the functioning of America. But this is a White House absolutely determined to smash all of that.
President Trump is in the process of rebalancing America's trading agreements with the entire world, bringing tens of billions of dollars in tariff revenues to our country, and finally ending the United States of America from being ripped off. These judges are threatening to undermine the credibility of the United States on the world stage.
It is astonishing stuff, and just in case anyone missed the subtlety of the White House position, the president was on hand to assist, posting a tough guy picture of himself on his social media account with the caption, "He's on a mission from God and nothing can stop what is coming." On a variety of fronts, though, the courts are certainly trying to stop him. He is facing scores of judicial defeats, not just on trade, but on mass deportations, with judges halting some of them, on the shuttering of federal government agencies and some of the mass layoffs orchestrated by Elon Musk, who this week finally beat a somewhat wounded retreat from Donald Trump's inner circle. The courts also halted another presidential gambit this week, the decision to ban Harvard University from recruiting foreign students. Students like Alfie Williamson, a Dane, studying at Harvard's world-renowned School of Government. He spoke to Ben on LBC last Sunday.
I was warned by multiple people not to speak out, not to put my name out there. My family, my friends, my peers, they all told me that I was taking great risk by voicing my opinion, which seems awfully ironic in a place like the United States, which was founded on the idea of freedom of speech.
Indeed, smart lad. Lest you are still thinking about sending your kids to an American college, just bear in mind that all US embassies and consulates have now been ordered to stop processing any new student visas, and that if your son or daughter is lucky enough to get one, and you then pony up, say, the $85,000 you'll need for just 1 year of tuition at one of America's Ivy League institutions, you could lose the money if the president and his brethren suddenly decide to chuck everybody out. Take a listen again to White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt and ask yourself, is this really the country where you want your kids to get an education?
Apprenticeships, electricians, plumbers, we need more of those in our country and less LGBTQ graduate majors from Harvard University. And that's what this administration's position is.
And you can throw all those Nobel Prizes out as well, especially the ones awarded to LGBTQ people. It is stunning to watch the disdain that Trump insiders have for the very country in which they live. The Republican Party used to try and own national pride in America's storied achievements. Now they seem to find everything just grubby. If I could find any examples of Democrat leaders standing up to Trump over the past week, I'd bring them to you. But instead, take a listen to one of America's most respected and experienced journalists, Scott Pelley, the former anchor of the CBS Evening News, now with 60 Minutes. He presided last weekend over the graduation ceremony at Wake Forest University in North Carolina. And I'm going to play this to you at length because he did not hold back.
In this moment, this morning, our sacred rule of law is under attack. Journalism is under attack. Universities are under attack. Freedom of speech is under attack. And insidious fear is reaching through our schools, our businesses, our homes, and into our private thoughts. The fear to speak in America. Power can rewrite history with grotesque, false narratives. They can make criminals heroes and heroes criminals. Power can change the definition of the words we use to describe reality. Diversity is now described as illegal. Equity is to be shunned. Inclusion is a dirty word. This is an old playbook, my friends.
There's nothing new in this.
He's courageous to have done that. In America today, it could be a career ender. And speaking of bravery, we'll finish this week with a concept that Donald Trump recoils against. The notion that he hasn't got the stones for the job, fueled by a new moniker that Wall Street has embraced. He was asked about it at the White House earlier this week.
Wall Street analysts have coined a new term called the taco trade. They're saying Trump always chickens out on your tariff threats, and that's why markets are higher this week. What's your response to that?
I kick out?
Chicken out.
Oh, then I chicken out. I've never heard that. You mean because I reduced China from 145% that I set down to 100 and then down to another number? Don't ever say what you said. That's a nasty question.
Hauntingly familiar, that. I'm sure I've heard it somewhere before.
What's wrong, McFly? Chicken?
Nobody calls me chicken.
Back to the future. At the end of this American week, Ben, I'm game for a trip in the DeLorean. What say we fire up the flux capacitor?
Simon Marks, LBC's Washington correspondent, as if he needs any introduction, with his weekly American week. Ben Kentish in for Tom Sporbrick here on LBC. It's 5:59, almost 6 o'clock. Here are the headlines.
This incident has left us all shocked and saddened.
The man accused of driving into a crowd during Liverpool's victory parade on Monday appears in court.
Previously, the 49-year-old said he was looking forward to defending himself in court.
So does comedian Russell Brand, as he pleads not guilty to charges including rape and sexual assault.
A lot of people will have to pay those fines, and it will not actually do anything about it because you cannot enforce it.
France announces plans to ban smoking in parks, on beaches and outside schools from July. And
for whoever needs to hear it, London is for everyone.
Multicultural Londoners say they feel much more of an attachment to their city than they do their country. Less than a third expressing a strong affinity to England. Coming up next, does it matter that so many people don't feel much loyalty to the country they live in?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 6 o'clock. The man accused of driving into a crowd during Liverpool's victory parade on Monday has appeared in court. 53-year-old Paul Doyle is facing charges including dangerous driving and GBH with intent. He's yet to enter a plea. Gerry Adams has